to Minute 96 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is James Wilson of the Blogging by Cinemalight website. Welcome, James.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it.
Yeah, always fun talking about movies with you, and since I know this is another one of your favorites, so it's great to be able to talk to you about this also.
I know this movie intimately, frame by frame.
Well, that's what we're doing here. We want to talk about it frame by frame. Feel free to go into as much detail as you want, discussing any aspects of the film that you want. Minute 96 opens with Lyeth looking at a crumpled up piece of paper and continues with Haynes getting standing dressed up for battle. This scene continues what we dealt with last week, where Colin got very frustrated by the way that Smee messed up one of the documents and wasted 4 days of work.
He left out an eagle.
Yes. Didn't you notice that? Couldn't you notice that? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. What can you do?
Exactly. So in this minute, Colin begins to, he's sitting there by himself. He decides to open up the document again, take a look at it. And he starts to notice something a little strange. Now, I mean, anyone who's been paying attention in this movie noticed beforehand that he's squinting, that he's looking at things a little. I don't know enough about what's called myopathy. I think that's what they call it, that he has.
Myopia?
Myopia, exactly right. Okay, myopia.
Basically.
The question is whether it happens, whether it's a gradual thing or whether it's something that happens, you know, instantaneous. Because it seems here that he's shocked that this actually happened to him.
Yeah, it's a little bit more gradual than that. I first started losing my eyesight when I was 6 years old and had to get glasses. And it was because when I was a kid, I was a constant reader. And when you're a kid, nobody tells you that, okay, when you're doing a lot of close reading, you also have to look up ever so often and focus on something far away. And I never did that. And so I wore glasses up until 3 years ago. I was extraordinarily nearsighted. And as he will describe later in another episode, I basically had to look at something close to my nose in order to see it clearly. Everything else was just a blur and colors. And legally blind.
So you could basically empathize with everything that Colin's going through here. You're familiar with it.
Yes. As a matter of fact, if I was looking at the movie with glasses and when that one shot shows up where he's looking at the papers and it kind of fuzzes out there, I was going, oh, yeah. Are these working?
Oh, well, right. That's the question. You wonder if your eyes are getting blurry because they definitely do that really well when they show they show the document really blurry. I was trying to figure out who's supposed to be in the picture. Is that supposed to be Mac or someone else? It's because it's so blurry. It's hard to tell.
You can't read it looks like it's Gordon Jackson.
Yeah, that's Mac. Yeah.
So yeah. As I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, and I love the way that they actually use, they go into so much detail here from the perspective of the tunnelers, you know, the escapers, that what they do, that, you know, he's dressed up in a suit. You know, in order to take these pictures, they got them dressed up, you know, to make them look more professional, you know, even though, you know, they wasted 4 days worth of work.
Yes, they very nice shots, but then they got that camera earlier on from Werner the Weasel.
Correct.
So they were able to do that.
Yeah.
We're starting a section here where it's been, everything started going south past the July 4th celebration where Ives was shot. And on the wire, and then the guards found Tom, and they had to switch to Harry, right quick, and it just meant more you know, they were so close.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically
so close to getting completed.
This is basically the second half of the movie. I mean, the right after the end of the scene with Tom getting found out and you know, Hilt saying that he's going to go out that night. So there is a cut that seems to be the cut that they would have used for an intermission. And you're 100% right. Basically, you know, the second half is not as upbeat as the first half. And things are getting more realistic, I guess you can say. It's not as Hollywoodized.
It's getting more complicated because at this point, everybody's starting to go through a certain amount of depression and things are going south on them. We'll get to these other sections, but one of these complications and one of these things that starts to take a downturn for them is Blythe going blind.
Yes.
It's going to make things extraordinarily complicated at the end. But we will get to that in another minute.
Especially for Blythe.
Yeah, especially for Blythe.
Yeah, right. I mean, this week we'll be discussing him also a lot. So, you know, that works well, too. But I like the way that what Sturgis does is when he shows this blurred image, he plays around with the camera a little bit. So it's just a one blurred image. The image changes from being blurred to fuzzy to you know, more blurred, and I mean, as you mentioned, you know, from someone who has suffered from something similar, you know, it makes you wonder. Okay, wait a second. Are my current glasses working? Or am I actually have I reverted back to seeing things the way that I used to see things?
Exactly.
You know, and that's done really well. I'm very curious to know, and I'll never know the answer to this. Whether Sturgis actually did research into that to check how would it look for somebody who has this affliction, you know, would you know, let's or maybe it's actually the cinematographer might have done that on purpose. It's a question of who would have made that decision.
I don't know. It's definitely an effect shot, and because it could be a superimposed image over another image. They actually move. They dramatize it a little bit more. It looks like his eyesight is failing, and his stereo vision is actually changing as we're watching this shot. But it looked like it was just a superimposure as opposed to you know, doing something that the cinematographer did. They might have let me look at that piece again. The entire shot, it looks like they did have to change the focal length a little bit, because when it starts out, it starts a little bit more clear and then it splits in two. The picture kind of fragments a little bit, as if they were just nudging it a couple of inches off of the original image. That sort of affliction doesn't occur like that, but it does make it much more dramatic.
Yes. No, also I think part of it is to let the audience get a better understanding of what he's possibly going through, even though we'll never get a complete understanding, which I guess is fine. Also, as you said, it's more to make it more dramatic. The idea also that it happened instantaneously is also part of the drama that they've added here. Part of it might be that, I mean, Colin seems to be in shock that it's happening, but I think it's more that he's been in denial up until now that that something's going on, and that
it's also something that happens if you do a lot of computer work up close.
I don't think Colin had that problem.
No, he did not have a lot of problem, but a lot of people are having it today because you're doing an awful lot of close-up work, especially if you're working with spreadsheets and things like that. You have to do a little bit of eye exercise and you know, look at something far off in order to keep the muscles in the eyes and changing focal length so that you can actually focus on something far away and then go back to the close-up work.
Yeah, okay, that's definitely true. So, I mean, basically, he then looks at his watch, which I think for some reason, maybe what's going through his mind is, okay, maybe there's something wrong with the paper. Let me just check my watch to make sure that that's okay. And he looks at his watch and you know, he starts squinting again and he realizes that he can't even see what time it is. And then this is obviously also just for the audience. He basically blurts out, I can't see a bloody thing because there's no one else around him. He's, you know, he's talking to himself saying, okay, something's going on here.
Yeah.
I'm not good really. Thing that, yeah.
Good things they didn't wire the barracks for sound.
Well, I've discussed this numerous times with other guests. You know, the idea of sound and light in these barracks is just amazing. You know, the Germans knew how to light this place really well, and the sound also, you can hear everything. So that works. I mean, even in the shot, if you look in the background, there's, you know, Colin sitting there, and there's a light over a little bit to his right, but he's still very well lit. You see lights. You see that you know, the pictures on the wall that are behind him and further back are also lit very well, along with the bookcase. I mean, there's...
That's a very powerful light.
And it's at night, so, you know, they're able to do this very well.
Bless the cinematographer. They did fancy the light on the right side of his face, and there's just a fill light on the left side, so it's not like he's extraordinarily well lit. So they let's say it's an enhanced light for dramatic purposes.
Yeah, of course.
Well, so much we have to be able to see them. Purposes.
If everyone was walking around in the dark, it would be a little more difficult for us to know what's going on in all of these scenes. Right. Okay, is there something else you wanted to say about this particular scene before we move on to the next scene?
Donald Pleasence, always a wonderful actor. Whenever you see him, he's a little bit prickly as you start out in the movie, but as you get a little further along, and as certainly when this section of the movie starts, he starts to gain a lot of sympathy. And as he gets more desperate through the rest of them, as we're going to be talking about in a couple of weeks, he gets even more sympathetic for his efforts to deal with this problem.
Yes, no question about that. All right, so we'll move on to the next scene, which is the second half of this minute, where we actually get to see the prisoners training for how they're going to try and blend in once out and around. So you have Max sitting there, and you know, he's testing everyone. So he's opening a passport, and you know, he looks at the forged papers for, I think that's Nemo. I think that's the name of the character. Mm-hmm. So again, you see his picture. This one, he's not wearing a suit. I'm trying to figure out what it is that he's wearing, because it looks like just an overcoat or something like that. I mean, the detail is just amazing. I mean, you see that they've fingerprinted them. You see that they have the stamps with the eagles. They have a signature. They you know, they tell us his birth date. It depends on whether you're using the European method. I'm assuming that that's the European method. So basically, his birthday is the 12th of March, 1920. Yes. Attention to detail here is just amazing, because in a lot of movies, in situations like this, they would just they would flub things. They, you know, you'd have gibberish there. It wouldn't look as real as you would think that it should. And they took their time to really give us something here. Now, what's interesting is that Tom Adams, who plays the character, was born March 9th. So they came close. It's 3 days off. I mean, obviously, he wasn't born in 1920. But, you know, they filmed... The movie obviously takes place 20 years after the events.
Yes.
But I found that very interesting that we're talking about a three-day difference.
Yes. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Some of the other things in this document, I can't really tell what it is. Obviously, I'm not fluent in German, so I couldn't tell you what some of these other things are. Obviously, there's a name. There's something There's a date of July 1st, 1941. Don't know what that refers to. And then, maybe it's just the dates that this document is good for, because then it goes until the 1st of September, 1946. So for some reason, he's got a 5-year and 2-month document, whatever that really means. Because it's interesting. You'd think that they would have done it to be, specifically just for 5 years.
Right.
Like most passports or things like that. Yeah, so that's always fun to look at these things as they go through. So then Mac begins speaking German to him. And we can say, actually, now that if we look at the picture of Nemo when he's standing there, so the coat that he's wearing is actually what's used in the picture.
Yes.
They basically took a picture of him, which also is a little suspicious. If people are walking around and they're wearing the exact same clothes that they were in the picture, you'd think that they would switch clothes between prisoners in order to make it seem a little more realistic.
Right.
If they get caught, it's like, if you're wearing a particular shirt on your passport, you don't go to the passport control and you're wearing that shirt, or the odds of you wearing that shirt are pretty slim.
Or just wear a tie or something like that, something. Just you look a little different.
Yeah.
Just so it's
exactly.
Just so when you're looking at the real person and you're looking at the picture, it doesn't look exactly the same. Oh, you had the picture taken today. Okay, fine.
That's right.
Back of the line.
And then so Nemo leaves, and Haynes walks in. He's wearing a German uniform.
Yes.
It's amazing that they were able to actually copy a uniform like this so perfectly with the supplies that they had. I mean, obviously, we saw a few weeks ago all of the fabrics that Griffith has, in his stock. Still, you know, to be able to fashion a German uniform out of it is quite interesting. Now, you see that he has a holster, but his holster is empty. Well, obviously, because he's not going to have a gun.
Right.
But that would also be suspicious if you have a German soldier walking around without a gun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you have your gun? I forgot it on my base. I lent it to a friend. I gave it to a shoulder holster. Yeah, could be. There's numerous things. And he comes in. He does a Heil Hitler, which is pretty. It's a pretty funny Heil Hitler, because it's not very enthusiastic, as you would expect someone to have. It's more enthusiastic than what von Luger gave us at the beginning, where he just raises up his hand, and says Heil Hitler. Then you can see in the background that Goff is next in line. He's standing there wearing a beret, trying to memorize his information on his,
Goff is like the glorified extra in this movie. It seems like whenever they need somebody or somebody to say a line, they bring Goff in. The actor who plays this fellow, do you know him?
Which one? Goff or Haynes?
Haynes.
Do I know him? Not personally.
No.
Haynes is played by Lawrence Montagne.
Montagne. That's it. Lawrence Montagne.
Montagne.
And he may be familiar to people who are fans of Star Trek, the original series, because he was the consort of Spock's betrothed in one of the big episodes, Zahn. And he was also a Romulan. He was a Romulan soldier in one of the other first season episodes when they first encountered the Romulans. But he's a very distinctive looking actor, and he was doing all sorts of television work throughout the 60s and 70s. He only died a few years ago. And when did he die?
2017.
Yeah.
On March 17th. So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, that's the way that this minute ends. Do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute before we, come back tomorrow with more information about this stuff?
Nope. We're in good shape on this minute. We'll continue this scene and see how Lawrence does.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, James, do you want to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. You can always check out my blog on which is called Blogging by Cinema Light. And usually I show up on the large association of movie blogs ever so often. We'll have a bunch of stuff coming up here in the not too distant future.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this podcast. You can send us an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com, and you can reach us by Twitter at greatescapemxm. So, Jim, you'll come back tomorrow?
We will come back tomorrow.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.